every Arizona homeowner's best friend.
Come on around back, Arizona, Saturday morning, 8 o'clock, the outdoor living hour of Rosie on the house. Saturday morning tradition since 1988. And if you're following along in your Rosie on the House homeowner handbook, you know, today in the Outdoor Living Hour, we're talking lawnmower maintenance. You know, the first Saturday of the month, we have the Farm Bureau. The second Saturday of the month, we have the Ultimate Garden Hour. The third Saturday, Notes from the Nursery. The fourth Saturday, Urban Farming. Well, every now and then, we have these fifth Saturdays in the month. And I didn't follow up with our guest in time, because when we scheduled this, I didn't realize it was Easter weekend. Holidays, I'm horrible at. And talked to him a while back. Yeah, we're all good. And then followed up on Thursday. He's like, wait, it's Easter weekend. I'm gone with the family. I'm like, it's Easter already? It's March. It can't be Easter. No, it is Easter. So we will not be talking about lawnmower maintenance today. I apologize. But we've got a lot of great content for this Outdoor Living Hour for you, the Arizona homeowner. And, of course, as always, you can join the conversation at 1-888-767-4348. That's 1-888-ROSIE for you. You can also text to 411-923 or email us at info@rosieonthehouse.com. And to start off this first segment, Rosie and Jennifer are going to take over because they have recently visited the KBiz show. That's the Kitchen and Bath KB International Show.
Industry show.
So how does Kitchen and Bath tie in with outdoors?
Oh, baby,
does it? Everybody wants to live outside. Just look outside today, that blue sky. And it's just a hint of what's coming this summer. You're going to want to spend lots of time out in that fresh air under those beautiful blue skies. So that's a big trend, is for people to develop that room outside where you do have kitchen, and I even have some bath things you can put outside.
That's
today,
right. So I heard somebody call it, they're erasing the separation.
Oh, erasing.
Erasing the separation of indoor and back patio.
Well, I like that.
And you do see that trend in a lot of ways, in the big glass walls, the disappearing glass doors. And, you know, it used to be, when you're talking about outdoor kitchens, you really just had to make your own. You'd build a block wall, and you'd put some cedar wood doors together, and boom, you were done. Well, now there's about 12 manufacturers of nothing but high-end, gorgeous, full extension drawer, ball-bearing operated, self-closing, soft-closing doors and drawers.
Weatherproof.
Weatherproof, baby. And when I mentioned it last week that we generally go to this Kitchen and Bath show as journalists to bring back to you, the Arizona listeners, the trends and the tips and the things of curiosity that caught our eye. But this year, with Jennifer and I having a remodel on the books for this year, it was more of a shopping trip.
Well, I didn't look at things any differently. I was just more excited about what I saw.
Yeah, okay, all right. I looked at things differently.
Did you?
I thought, what's gonna fit in that backyard kitchen? And my first criteria for a back door, backyard, back patio kitchen is about twice a year, I want to be able to fire up the pressure washer and just blow it clean. Black widow spiders, little rat's nest, dust,
dog hair,
dog hair. I just want to be, whatever I put out there is going to be pressure washer worthy.
Did you find such a thing?
Yes, but I can't afford it.
That's one thing about going to the show. You know, people who can afford to go and set up those displays generally are bigger high-end companies, but it's still inspiring. It's kind of like going to a fashion show. You go and look at the possibilities, and it kind of opens your eyes to new things. And sometimes we find out that we get all excited and something's not even being manufactured yet. They're kind of beta testing it. Interest level?
A couple metal cabinets that were powder coated seemed to get close to fitting the bill. A couple of them I really liked. But in two occasions, they said, well, they'll be available in August.
Well, one of those brands I wanted to mention is Forno. And
He was everywhere.
He was everywhere. Started out with just a gas stovetop, I think, but now he's got, you know, just aisles of stuff for indoor kitchen and plus a big presence on the outdoor, which they have not brought to market yet. But he's out of Italy. His desire, he says, is to manufacture quality products at a reasonable price. So, and the one thing you can't tell from this end is what's the durability of things, right?
But, not yet.
But he had one thing he did have that was just beautiful and is a trend, I think, is even more so than the past, is a pizza oven. I probably saw 10 brands of pizza ovens. That was really big this year. And it's just so fun.
And multi-fuel.
The ovens themselves.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. Gas, electric, log, whatever you want. Which I think is just a great way to set up entertainment in your yard.
It is.
You know, if you've got kids and you're wanting them to hang out at your house, what better than to have a pizza oven for Fridays?
What better?
Yeah.
I'm happy with a barbecue that has a rotisserie motor on it.
Okay. Well, with your chicken, that'll bring them too.
Yeah, and you know, that's the thing about entertaining at my house. They kept saying a lot of these high-degree smokers and a lot were put it in, forget about it, walk away. That's not the way I cook. I like fussing over it.
Yeah.
Constantly. That's why I don't bake anything.
Well, the guys all stand outside and gather, you know, with their refreshments, and they visit over the barbecue, and the girls are inside doing the salad, the baking, and all that. Well, generally, but that's
what
fun.
What are you brushing on that rotisserie right now? I can't tell you.
It's a secret.
That's my secret. But here, stick your finger in it and taste it. Tell me how you like it. So the outdoor kitchen is really come a long way, and then the pass through feature of the countertops, where you're not having to lift the tray over the bottom of the window, but the window actually sits down in the countertop and you just slide the tray across. So, I mean, cabinets made of stainless steel, cabinets made of powder-coated stainless steel. One I liked was 3/4-inch thick marine grade high-density polyethylene. Now, how can you go wrong with that?
Huh? Bomb-proof. What was the maker on that one? Do you have it?
That was NatureCast. And they are more of a wood-looking, traditional-looking cabinet that look pretty good. So I've got some more shopping to do. But if you're contemplating an outdoor kitchen, don't do what we used to do and just throw up some 8/8/16 block partitions and frame in some cedar doors. You can do a lot better than that. They actually have weather seals, dust seals, rain seals on all the doors and the drawers, so things in there can stay reasonably usable and clean, just reaching in there and pulling them out. And then the sinks that are available for out there in the outdoor kitchen. I've always been a big fan of LK. You know, they're right here in America, stainless steel. It's what we've had in, I think, every home we've ever had. And what I didn't know is LK will build a custom sink for you. So I drew one up and I sent it to him. I said, I want one with 2 basins the same size this deep, and I want drip pan edges going out on either side. It's a 6-foot sink.
Did you get a price on that?
Not yet.
Well, another around the sink idea, one of the really popular hits at the show was a system called Zipwater. And Zipwater, you can go take a look at it. They're at just about every place. They're at this Central Arizona Supply.
I could hardly get you out of that booth.
The line was out the door. So Zipwater is it's a luxury item. I mean, I think it's between $5,000 and $6,000.
That's luxury.
And it's a system that goes under your sink, kind of similar to what maybe a water softener system would look like. But you put that under there. It has cartridges in it. And then you have to buy their faucet. But that faucet will deliver boiling water, which they're the only ones that do that.
Yeah, boiling.
Boiling.
Not hot, not steaming. Boiling.
It will deliver. You keep the cartridges replaced, and it will deliver bubbly water. Carbonated water, hard word, and water. So that's just really a great little feature, and you don't have to have a full sink for that. So that one was really, really a hit.
Lots of features that way. The other thing I like is, you know, we've got backyards in Arizona. You put a little shade on them, and you've got back patios that you can use really, really comfortable without any auxiliary atmospheric conditioning about 6 months out of the year. three in the spring and three in the fall. Through the middle of the winter, it can get a little chilly in a shaded patio, and you might need some auxiliary heat. In the course through the middle of the summer, you're going to need some auxiliary cooling, either by way of an evap cooler discreetly located at the edge of the pergola or the patio, or a misting system. But I was particularly impressed with some of the new infrared heating systems, electric. I'd always been drawn to the gas burners, ceiling mounted, that threw heat out. But boy, these infrared electrics were really nice. I thought they were particularly cost-effective and very streamlined and kind of out of sight.
And very warm.
And very warm, yeah.
And Julia put those all on Facebook with the links. So if you want to see any of those products, we have the infrared heaters. We have the Forno products.
Appliances, Italian appliances.
Anything we talk about this segment will be there. You can click through. And those, we had talked a little bit or quite a bit last week about with Booth Built about Ramadas and things. And one we came across was Azenco, which is a high-end one. And they actually, when we talked to them, Booth Built's one of their installers. So we got to meet them and see the product. Just very nice.
Yeah, if y'all want to know anything about shade structures, shade patios, grab last week's Rosie on Mel's 8 o'clock hour or 9 o'clock hour where we talked everything about pergolas, ramadas, and patios. The biggest encouraging trend I found at the 2024 National Association of Home Builders Kitchen and Bath Show is the statement, black and white has been everywhere. Kitchens, living rooms, you name it. Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
Homes, too.
Everywhere.
New builds.
Well, now the new trend is warm wood accents, and green is the new blue.
Call this Gary's theme song.
Yeah.
Gary loves this song.
Yeah.
It's timeless.
Oh, okay.
It's recorded in the 70s. It still sounds good.
It does sound.
Okay, so who sings it, though?
You.
I have no idea. Who sings it?
Group called The Looking Glass.
Ah.
Were you too embarrassed to bring up the outdoor shower?
No, because I think it would have been... No, we just ran out of time. I have a bunch more stuff. But I think about the kids.
Our house is going to have one of those.
Well, you know, when you think about the kids running from the pool to the bathroom, Romy, and you guys come sliding around that corner across the tile, hit the wall, bounce back and forth, and end up in the shower, to have an outdoor rinse-off station would be just incredible. And they had some really pretty ones. But I have a question for you. So yeah. in looking at them,
we use the hose a lot.
Yeah, yeah, there's nothing wrong with the hose, you know. There's absolutely you can look at all the expensive things. That's what I told Dad last night. A garden hose does the trick.
Yeah.
But they have beautiful systems that look similar to what you would have on the inside of the house. You know, big shower heads and stuff. But
it's hard to get hot water out of the garden hose.
This is true.
Except in the very middle
of summer.
I was saying, summertime is the only time we use it getting out of the pool.
Sometimes it's too hot.
Yeah, it could be too hot.
We will have an outdoor shower.
Well, do you have to spend $3,000 on one? Or can you just that's like, oh, they're rated for outside, but is it worth that much more money? Or could you just get a regular indoor one and replace it a couple times and still save money?
Maybe. Well, I imagine you could. I mean, you know, I was mentioning how much I like LK. I mean, I like Delta Plumbing Fixtures. I mean, they're guaranteed for life when you buy the all brass professional version. You put a $400 Delta shower head out there.
That's right.
If it has to be replaced every 15 years, just save your receipt.
Well, if you're interested in the luxury look, that Waterline, WATR line, had some beautiful ones for outdoors. And also, Romy, they have a station, which might be really nice, like by your house. You know how when you come out of the ocean, I don't know, you're not ocean guys, but when you come out of the ocean, they have these towers, and they have spigots off of them, and so you would stick your leg and your feet full of sand and dirt and rinse off there. So it was just a nice residential application of that system. And again, it was about $3,000, but it's just a really nice tower where you can just turn around wherever you need it. And coming out of an arena or a sandy volleyball pit would be really nice to have.
I want an outdoor shower with my outdoor sound system playing Brandy. And mood lights.
Oh, man. Yeah. We got the whole experience. There you go. We got the spa experience going on.
Yeah. All right. Well, in the outdoor hour, Romy, you were visiting this week with somebody, a first-time home buyer, and you were kind of running them through a list of, okay, from apartment to a now you got a yard to take care of.
So we were looking at essential tools for every homeowner, whether you do work or not. You got to have some tools around your house. And when it comes to the landscape, most outdoor tools come with two different types, either wood or fiberglass. And that's the first thing you got to look at. Which type of tool are you going to go with? Do you have a preference?
Fiberglass with gloves.
Yes, was the thing.
They hurt like heck.
Well,
if you let them get.
Or keep a fresh coat of paint on them all the time.
Either way, you've got to keep the tools covered because the wood will dry out and splinter, and you can get splinters working with them there.
Oh, boy, can you?
Fiberglass, same thing. The coating, the UV rays, burn it off, and then as you're using it with your hand, you'll get done. You're like, why are my hands itching? Well, it's all the little tiny shards of glass from the fiberglass that end up in your skin. So either way, keep your tools. You got to have a shed. You got to have a garage, whatever the case may be. Keep them out of the sun when you're not using them. And just know either way, you know, there's pros and cons. I really don't have a preference between wood or fiberglass. And if you look at my outdoor tools, you'll see that there's a mix of both. Some of them don't even come with wood. Like my pole saw. I've got a really long pole saw that is telescoping, and you can extend it out three times. Well, they don't make that. Well, you don't have a telescoping tool when it comes to wood that I'm aware of.
Me neither.
So that is fiberglass. But again, keep it inside. But you got to have a shovel. And a lot of people don't know from certain parts of the country, probably never even seen a flathead shovel unless they're on a farm. I mean, what would you ever use a flathead shovel for if you're have a complete lawn in the Midwest? Garden. I mean, what would you ever use a flathead shovel for?
Well, they do a lot of tree mulching in the Midwest.
Hmm? Maybe.
You know, where I mean, there's some yards that have 4-foot, 5-foot diameter wells that are 8 inches thick. And that would be, that. I don't know.
Maybe.
And composting. I don't know.
But we have a lot of rocks in our landscape. And
yeah.
When you're digging and trenching, you don't want to dig straight through your rock. I mean, that's
scoop it right across the top.
Landscape. So you got to have your flathead shovel to move, whether you're digging a hole for a plant or tree, trying to get some new landscape or irrigation lines in. You know, use that flathead shovel. You got to move, scoop all that landscape rock out of your way. A couple things to look for: Ames, AMES, and Corona. Just like it, the beverage, CORONA. But this one, Corona Tools USA, both of them make a lot of hand tools that are made in America. So look for those brands, Corona, Ames, American-made products. Water conservation topic this hour. We've got Joanne Toms, Environmental Program Manager from the City of Glendale. Welcome back to the program. Last time it was a call-in. We got you in studio this time.
We sure did. Good morning. Thank you for having me. Nice to see you, Romy and Rosie.
Thank you. And we've got talking points to cover about planting for water conservation. But before that, you actually had quite a bit of history on the whole Water Use It Wisely campaign and the AMWA. And just for fun, let's go through a little bit of that history. It's very fascinating, and I don't think a lot of people know it.
Absolutely. I love water history. So in Arizona, it really all started because of the 1980 Groundwater Management Act, and that, you know, protected our groundwater. And it also required water providers, whether it was a city or a private water provider, to have conservation programs. So that's actually why I'm here today. And then also the Water Use It Wisely campaign, that came around in 1999. There were several partners at the time, the city of Mesa, and then the city of Glendale also joined on in 1999. So we've been promoting Water Use It Wisely now for decades. And I think that's just really exciting. And it really just goes to show that Arizona has been a water leader in the United States.
It's funny, we've been running a survey all month long. It actually started back in August, so it's been more than a month. And we've kept it on through this Saturday's broadcast. And it's promoting our listeners to provide feedback. If you were in charge of this new water infrastructure budget, Arizona SB 1740, where would you allocate the $1 billion for water resources? And it's absolutely amazing how many people say stuff that I'm like, well, Water Use It Wisely has already been doing that for 20 years. Well, no, we've been doing that for decades. No, that was added 10 years ago. I mean, so many of the solutions we are doing, it's just you're not paying attention.
Absolutely. Yeah, and in Glendale, our conservation program started in 1985. And so in those, you know, almost 40 years, we have a really robust landscape rebate program, and we've had over 5,600 customers convert unwanted grass to xeriscape, totaling over 118 acres, again, of unwanted grass to a water-wise landscape. And so a lot of the other cities also have various rebates to help our customers improve water efficiency.
That's almost one-sixth of a square mile.
Oh, my gosh.
That's very impressive. Congratulations. I mean, when you are doing that in residential properties, I mean, that's a lot of properties that have converted.
Absolutely. And we also have a lot of commercial customers and HOAs that have just taken out some of those non-functional grass areas. And I have to admit, those are my biggest pet peeves. And maybe it's because back in college, I worked for a municipality in the summertime. And so I had to take the push mower off of the truck. I had to weed whip the area. And it was always the areas of turf that were like maybe, I don't know, 30 feet long by 5 feet wide. And to top it off, Romy, I had to wear a sign on the back that said stay clear like 30 feet because I was weed whipping. And, you know, there's always debris and rocks. So I think I take it as a personal affront now when I see these really weird non-functional turf areas. So again, you know, water conservation, we're not against grass. You know, grass is part of xeriscape. But really what we're trying to get rid of are those non-functional turf areas. So those really little areas that are just a pain for the landscape contractors to have to maintain. And also you can't water those areas really efficiently. I don't recommend that you have an area of turf that's less than, say, 6 feet wide because you just can't get it watered, right?
That's true. Without wasting a lot. That's
right.
Yeah,
it's going to go on the
overspray
street.
And everywhere else. Yeah, exactly.
So when you drove down this road this morning where there's this row of palm trees and that grass patch that's about 3 feet wide, did you just like run your tire up on it and burn out across it? Let me just take that out for you while I'm coming through here.
Oh, no, I'm passive aggressive. I just gave it the good old stink eye.
Well, you know, one of the ways that water conservation hit me was in our outdoor living hours, speaking with gardeners, master gardeners from all over the state of Arizona. One of them have the conviction that why do you plant it, water it, fertilize it, cultivate it, trim it, spend all this time if you can't eat it?
So, oh, I agree.
So, that was a major light bulb for me. Okay, nothing on my property is going to get that kind of care, affection, money, resources, and time spent on it unless it produces something for me to eat.
Absolutely. You know, grass has tricked us to grow it all over the world. And in Glendale, we had a program a couple years ago called Eat Your Yard, where we introduced families to all of the different desert edibles. So like mesquite and, you know, prickly pear and all sorts of wonderful desert plants that are edible that you can actually benefit from with putting all of that money and water and time and patience into growing your landscape. Why not grow, a desert edible landscape?
Amen.
Why not? And when you are cutting back on pulling those lawns out, you know, we talk about this fairly regularly in the Outdoor Living Hour. You're killing off that Bermuda is pretty key to making sure your Xeriscape doesn't get torn up, grown over. You know, that can be a very frustrating thing to put in a nice Xeriscape and then have a year later, 2 years later, 3 years later, all this Bermuda just coming up everywhere.
Absolutely. That's such a good point because Bermuda grass, you know, it's a warm season grass. It goes dormant. So it goes dormant when it's not watered, and it also goes dormant when the soil temperatures get to be about 55 degrees, so in the wintertime. And you're so right that if you've gone through all of the energy and effort to get rid of that grass and then convert it to a desert landscape, you still may have some areas of problematic Bermuda grass that grows through. But really, we recommend best practices on how to kill that Bermuda grass. And so there's really good information on the waterusitwisely.com webpage. And again, that's just waterusitwisely.com that goes through the different techniques to kill that Bermuda grass. There's chemical means that you can do. And then also the University of Arizona Cooperative Extension has really good information about other, you know, techniques. So one of which would be called solarization. And that's kind of like when you bake the grass, and you have to do that with like a plastic, and then you just kind of bake it in the summertime. So again, there's really, really good information online on and different ways to eradicate that Bermuda grass. But that is key, is making sure that that's plant material is gone before you do your desert landscape, because grass is an opportunist. You know, that Bermuda grass will wake back up when it gets some water.
And is there anywhere that you like to send homeowners to look at good Xeriscape gardens just to get an idea of what's available?
Well, absolutely. My favorite Xeriscape demonstration garden is at the Glendale Public Library. It's the Glendale Xeriscape Demonstration Garden, and that's spread out over around the whole library. I actually work out of the Glendale Public Library, and so I'm wearing a shirt today that says, if you have a garden and a library, you know, you have everything you need. So I'm loosely quoting that from Cicero, but it's true. You know, what a great place to work. But what's nice.
And so where is that? I can picture the town hall building, couple stories, backs up against Grand, about 95th Avenue.
Right. So the Glendale Xeriscape Garden, if you know where Glendale Community College is, it's just north of the college, or 59th Avenue and Brown, or 59th Avenue and Peoria are our cross streets.
Yeah. So you're farther in than the downtown, old historic Glendale.
Correct.
Okay. Yep.
And what's great about the Xeriscape Garden is that you can see plants in mature size. So it's so misleading when you go to a nursery and you see those tiny little plants and then you put it in your landscape and it doesn't fit, right? And so that's nice about the Xeriscape Garden. You can see different design techniques that we have. You can see combinations of plants that work well together. And if you go to the waterusitwisely.com webpage, we have a link to all of the different Xeriscape demonstration gardens around the valley. And so, you know, there's gardens in the East Valley, like Mesa and Tempe and Chandler, and then also in the West Valley. So Glendale, like I mentioned, Peoria, and then the City of Surprise, I believe, just put in a new Xeriscape garden. So who doesn't want to go to a garden and spend some time, right?
You know, I got to tour the ASU's technical campus that used to be an airfield way out in the East Valley. They did a really nice job out there, too.
I know exactly what you're talking about. I think it's called the Polytechnic campus.
Yes, thank you.
And it's so beautiful out there because it's very much blended in with the desert. And I love, love, love their botanical signs. So you can see the name of a plant, you know, its common name, and then you can also see its botanical name. But yeah, cool.
And aside from the plants, they've got a great number of landscape architectural features and designs that they've put into hardscapes.
Oh, they totally do. And I love a lot of the passive rainwater harvesting that they have there. So, you know, passive rainwater harvesting is a way to capture water into the landscape. You don't necessarily have to have tanks or cisterns. That would be like a combination of, you know, swales and basins. So the whole point of passive rainwater harvesting is to collect that water, you know, slow it down, spread it, and then soak it into the ground. And so sometimes you may be walking in a landscape and not even know that it's, you know, passively harvesting that rainwater.
And the point of mentioning that, so many people think desert landscape, you know, they're in their mind, it's what they saw in the airplane flying in or driving over from California when you're out in that stretch of I-10 between Needles, or that's actually on 40, but like coming over from Blythe, or if you're coming over from on 8, there's long stretches that just not a lot to be desired out there. But you go to these xeriscape gardens and see, you know, how beautiful a desert native landscape can be. And maybe not all of them are native, but they're from desert adapted climates from around the world. Just how many different succulents and trees and color and how beautiful it can be without being a water hog.
I agree with you. I think, you know, there's a spectrum of xeriscape gardens, right? You know, some people really just want that very minimalist landscape. I'm maybe on the other end of the spectrum where I like a very natural looking landscape. So we have, you know, beautiful desert adapted trees in my front yard, and we have understory shrubs, and we have a lot of wildflowers. And I love creating, you know, a Sonoran desert habitat in our Phoenix metro area. You know, I live just up the street. I live on the north side of Piestewa Peak. And, you know, it's a pretty urban area. And I think xeriscape can be really, really beautiful. But I do appreciate that some people really just want kind of that minimalist landscape. But don't be limited with a xeriscape. It can be attractive and colorful and habitat friendly and wildlife friendly.
So as I realized my mistake and didn't schedule our guest with enough lead time for lawnmower maintenance, we're like, all right, so what are we going to wrap up the 8 o'clock hour with? And about 12, maybe 10 years ago, we kind of broke up the 8 o'clock hour. Instead of just doing landscape gardening questions every single Saturday, we're like, all right, there's so much more to cover as it relates to the outdoors in Arizona. So the first Saturday of the month is the Farm Fresh Hour. We have the Arizona Farm Bureau in, and they bring a different farmer or rancher in with them, talking about local commodities that they're bringing. Second Saturday of the month, it was Talking Trees. We had a John Eisenhower, a great local arborist for many, many years, but he retired. Good for him. God bless him. So that hour has now changed to the Ultimate Garden Hour with Agriscaping. Third Saturday of the month, Jay Harper, who's been on radio in Arizona talking landscape and gardening since 83, and I don't rub this in his face, but I mean, it was like the year after I was born, comes in the third Saturday of the month. Fourth Saturday, we have the Urban Farm Hour with Farmer Greg. Well, every now and then we have this fifth Saturday of the month, and we bring in random topics here and there. Well, I thought, closing out this hour, let's do a recap of those other hours. So I went to Podbean, who does our podcasting, and then puts it out on, you know, the major other platforms, Apple, iPodcast, whatever they call it now, iHeart, Spotify, Alexa, TuneIn. But they do the analytics as well, and I went through there. I'm like, all right, let's see what the most streamed hours were from the 8 o'clock hour. Well, I had mentioned John Eisenhower, now retired. Well, his topic, his broadcast of the Arizona State Tree, the Blue Palo Verde, not only is the most streamed 8 o'clock hour broadcast, but it's the most streamed podcast we've had in our podcast history.
Interesting.
Originally aired May 31st, 2014.
And how would somebody find that, Romy?
Well, the easiest way is if you go to rosieonthehouse.com, click on Homeowner Resources, you'll get a drop-down menu. It has radio/podcast option, second option. Click on that. Today's broadcast, the Outdoor Living Hour, click on that. Each one of our hours has four segments. Scroll to segment 4, and I've put all of these links in there. That's going to be a lot easier than trying to go back and search through our podcast history to find each one of these 10 podcasts I'm going to mention. Number 2, originally aired. Go ahead.
And that was the Blue Palo Verde, the state tree?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And my guess is it's just people looking for information on the State Street, and they find it. And once you start getting traction on something online, you get more and more and more and more and more. So somewhere along the way it was tagged. Number two in the Outdoor Living Hour. This one was really interesting because this original air date was October 23rd, 2019. So it's a kind of around Thanksgiving-ish.
Okay.
Another broadcast from that same, another hour from that broadcast on that same day ranked really high as well. Well, I don't know if y'all remember, this was a live broadcast in Wickenburg. And we were covering the Hacienda River Preserve. So that was the second most. The third one was really interesting. It was one of our Farm Fresh broadcasts, and it was breakfast, hot breakfast in Arizona. And we had Julie Murphy from the Farm Bureau. Her farm guest was the Duncan Family Farms. And we also in that hour had the president at the, well, and still current president right now, Stephanie Smallhouse, was in talking about a new bill that was coming through Congress and what that means to Arizona agriculture. That was February 1st of 2020. Number three was an Urban Farm Hour with Farmer Greg. And this one we were talking about watering strategies. Makes sense.
Good.
Watering. Pretty common in Arizona. That one was from March 27th of 2021. And then number five, rounding it out, was February 19th, 2022, talking pruning, fertilizing, and springtime gardening with Jay Harper, which for right now would be another great one to go back and listen to if you're looking at doing anything in your spring gardening. So those were the top five downloaded or streamed or whatever you want to call it.
And again, you would just go to rosieonthehouse.com, go to today's broadcast, go to 8 o'clock hour, 4 segment, all the links are right there. So then you'd have the opportunity to listen to the five most popular outdoor living podcasts that we've ever published on our fifth Saturday shows.
Correct.
I love it. Okay.
Now.
That's what they're interested in.
So I got through that, but then I was thinking, somebody's brand new to the broadcast, and I was going to explain how the Outdoor Living Hour is scheduled and worked. And to what one broadcast from each of these different topics should they go listen to?
Oh.
So for the Farm Bureau, that one was really hard because we talk about water a lot. I love the topic of water, but I actually had three for that hour because you couldn't narrow it down. Anytime we have Ed Curry from Santa Cruz Chili on.
Chili.
I mean, we just spend the whole hour laughing. And the way he presents it, and when you're a true expert, you know how much you don't know. And that's something that Ed always is so humble about in his experience and his growing and his, I mean, he's got people from around the world that come and try and learn how to grow chilies from him. And he's like, I don't know, I'm still learning. And he's been doing this for decades.
Best green chili salsa on the planet.
And that was kind of one of the things that I kind of narrowed this to, because that broadcast has affected me more than anything. From the first time we had him on, I've never not had Santa Cruz chili in my refrigerator since then. Hour number two, or I'm sorry, second Saturday of the month with the Ultimate Garden Hour, Hyper Local Food, which we just had, must listen to. Third Saturday of the month with Outdoor Living, we had a great one on watering in the summer. Hour number four, the Worm Farm with Farmer Greg. And then number five,